Okay, well, that's a great way to get this started. So, welcome to Brewing with Cannabis Using THC and CBD in Beer. I'm Doug Piper, and at least some of you voted for me for the AHA Governing Committee. This is my first year, and those of you that didn't vote for me, well, I'm sorry, you're stuck with me. But we're going to have fun. For those that don't know me, which is probably the majority of you in the audience, I'm the founder and host of the Gourmet Brewing Channel, where we talk to subject matter experts. It's a lot of fun. Join us sometime. But you're not here to hear about that. You're here to hear about Keith and everything we've got going on. So they've told me I need to stick to a script. Those of you that know me, I'm not good about doing that, so I will go through the script. Before we get started, everybody please take your seats. Looks like we've got a lot of people that are compliant with that. We thank you. And they've asked you to move to the center of the aisle, but right now it looks like we're good. All I would ask you to do is, if the crowd picks up, you know, slide over and let's make room, because I suspect this will be a full one. Join me as I pretend to silence my phone, but since this is where my script is, I am not going to silence mine, but you need to silence yours. We don't want to interrupt Keith. We'll be taking questions, and I would really ask you to come to the microphone. It's super important. It's being recorded for your AHA review and those that didn't make it. And so if you don't come up to the mic, nobody picks up what your question is. And then Keith or somebody will have to repeat it. So go over and line up behind the mic. That'll be a big help, and you'll appreciate it, and our audience here to come will appreciate it. And that QR code that you see up there is what will guide you to those videos. Now, it'll be a few months before these actually get posted. But meanwhile, you can go and look, and there are hundreds. I think there's over 400 of them on there, and they're great. So go through them sometime. I really enjoy them. I think that's one of the best parts of being an AHA member. And let's see, did I cover everything? I'm not reading it word by word. Let's see. Oh, the survey. The survey's essential. I want to beg you, please take a minute to do the survey. As a new governing committee member, I'm walking in and I'm asking, you know, what our AHA members want. And a lot of people don't do surveys. And frankly, other than conversations we have with each other, that's really the only way we know what you want. So please take just a minute, fill out that survey. And that really helps us and helps newbies like me especially. And let's see. All right. So we're ready to get to the main topic. Mr. Villa, he has created the Blue Moon. I think most everybody knows what Blue Moon is by this time. He's retired from Miller Coors, and you really don't look like retirement age, with 32 years experience. But it wasn't long before he launched Syria. Is that how you pronounce it?
Syria. Rhymes with area.
Syria. I knew I'd get it wrong. Syria Brewing Company. Hey, I got it right twice. Dedicated to brewing the finest alcohol-free beers without compromising taste. And those of you that have tried, that is tough. You really pick some challenging things to work on. He developed an innovative brewing process that creates great-tasting, authentic, full-bodied craft beers with zero ABV. Now, some of you may have overheard us talking before we got started. There's a difference between NA beer and 0.00 beer. I did not know that. And apparently 0.00 beer, which is what Keith produces, there's only two other companies in the world that can produce it. So pretty amazing stuff, but it gets better. And my phone just decided to turn off. There we go. He is the author of the new book, Brewing with Cannabis, Using THC and CBD in Beer, which explores the convergence of cannabis and brewing the modern craft beer movement. So I was asking Keith earlier, you know, how it's been pioneering the combination of beer and cannabis. You know, how do you decide what the dosage levels are? As far as I know, there's really no precedents or any research out there. So, Keith, when you were running your first batches, my guess is you had to just throw some in because you really had no idea how much it would be absorbed. How did you know that you had too much?
No, that's a good question because with alcohol, I think all of us are pretty familiar with alcohol, how much you can ingest before you start to feel buzzed and eventually drunk. With cannabis, we had no clue at the beginning. We did an extract, put it in the beer, and said, well, you know, how much should we put in exactly? And we just took a guess, put it in, drank it. And after spending 3 hours couch locked on the floor, it's like, that was too much, way too much. And so we figured that's about 10 times. Let's cut it down by 10. And we did. And it's like, okay, that we started feeling a buzz. And we said, okay, that's about right, but let's just cut it down just a little more. So, yeah, so just through experimentation. So I highly recommend do not start out with over 100 milligrams because you will feel it and you will. There's an actual term called couch lock where you actually go in the fetal position on the floor and can't do anything and you just wait for it to wear off. It's funny also because cannabis has never, I guess in medical records, has never led to an overdose death. People just feel high, sick, dizzy, you name it, but they recover. Alcohol, on the other hand, has led to liver failure, blood poisoning, and eventually death. So there are some big differences there, but yeah, to answer the question, we just used ourselves as guinea pigs, and that was it. So.
Well, as you can tell, this is going to be a lot of fun. And Keith, welcome to the stage. We appreciate you coming
to
Hope Group.
Thanks. Thank you. Okay, well, yeah, thanks, Doug, and thanks for joining us this morning for a talk on brewing with cannabis. Hopefully you can pick up a few little nuggets to take home and brew and experiment on yourselves, on your friends. I have some tips in here, too, to stay safe. So with that, is that it?
Here's your QR code.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, QR code, okay. Got that. Yeah, and I'm a brewmaster and founder. You already heard all that. Last night I talked a little bit about my story and starting Saria, Donovan, and Blue Moon Brewing Company, going to a gay bar with Charlie. So let's see. So warning. This is so really before I start, I just want to iterate and then reiterate that there are a lot of unknowns about cannabis right now, mainly because it's federally illegal, so there's not a ton of research that's been done on cannabis, and specifically THC. But there are some studies and some things that have been done. One thing is that we know CBD really gets that nerve in the back of our throat, the thing that makes us gag if we put our finger or other things in our throat. CBD really helps to get that nerve and I guess make it immune to stimulation. And so so what happens is that if you're on cannabis, specifically on CBD, think about how people use that for chemotherapy. And with chemotherapy, what happens is typically people start to throw up and they get the dry heaves to the point where some people are throwing up hundreds of times a day. And one of the few things that helps is cannabis because it helps with the vagus nerve reflex. But imagine young people at a college frat party and they're doing shots of tequila, shots of whiskey, whatever it is. And normally after, you know, 5-6 shots, the body says, stop, time out, you know, I've had enough. And you throw up because your body feels that presence of alcohol and says, we got to expel this from our body before our blood alcohol goes dangerously high. And so you do that. But if you're on cannabis, you won't feel like throwing up. In fact, you could probably polish off that whole bottle with no problems, which could result in blood alcohol going to very dangerous levels, if not actually dying. So that's why there's so many unknowns and so many potential dangers of mixing alcohol and cannabis. So I just want to throw that out there. And, of course, I talked about couch lock. That's something you don't want to have happen because you're just pretty much laying there waiting for the effect to wear off. Cross-fading, that's another thing you got to watch out for. That's when you mix alcohol and cannabis so that you're high and buzzed at the same time. For people in the cannabis industry, I've run across a lot that actually like the effect of cross-fading. But there are people in the alcohol industry who, if you've got an alcohol buzz and all of a sudden you start getting a buzz from THC, it can make you feel nauseous at first, dizzy, and potentially sick. So crossfading is the mixing of THC with alcohol. And like I said, for those with a lot of experience, they take it easy and they use it to feel actually a real pleasurable experience. But unless you have a lot of experience, be very careful with that. And there's lots of unknowns. I throw up there the Four Loko story because that's one of the things that in the past really took the alcohol world by storm. If you remember, back in the 90s, Red Bull came out with Red Bull vodka, all those things. And what happened is that college kids started experimenting and saying, wow, I could have a buzz, and with all that caffeine, I could stay up all night and party. And so it became the rage on college campuses and, you know, just young people's partying culture. Brewers picked up on that and started coming up with malt beverages that were filled with alcohol and caffeine. And so what happened was things like Sparks, Four Loko, were being consumed in huge quantities. And these things packed a lot of alcohol. Typically, a can of Four Loko had as much alcohol as, I don't know, two or three beers. And they had caffeine, lots of caffeine, typically on the order of maybe two or three cups of coffee or sometimes even more. And what happened then is young people started feeling strange, typically the heart. There were heart arrhythmias, lots of different negative effects. Of course, people got drunk and kind of stayed up, so they were basically sober, but not sober, awake, drunk people. And it led to a bunch of issues. College rapes went up, just all kinds of things, to the point where the feds finally had to step in and say, get these things off the market because they are a public nuisance. And so brewers had to remove them. And then brewers came back with reformulated versions of these things that had no caffeine. So for the longest time, the federal government disallowed the use of caffeine in anything with alcohol. And to the point where they even said not even coffee. You could use de minimis amounts of caffeine, which is their way of saying, okay, if you brew with decaffeinated coffee and there's that natural amount that's there, you could do that. And so brewers experimented and did all kinds of things. But anyway, bottom line is there's still a lot of unknowns about cannabis and about mixing alcohol with cannabis. So please be very careful if you want to pursue this path. So as I said last night, and for those of you that weren't there last night, I got my undergraduate degree in molecular biology from University of Colorado in Boulder. And then went to Brussels and got my PhD in brewing from the University of Brussels, where luckily they let me defend in English. But I was enrolled in the Flemish University, where they speak Flemish, which is an older form of Dutch. And then the brewing school was located on the French-speaking campus. So I had to learn both languages. I had undergrads. I had to teach in both languages. So it is tough over there if you decide to go over there and get any kind of education, brewing education. You do have to learn a little bit of each language. And then at the bottom there is the spine of my doctoral thesis, which is basically a whole book on how to control diacetyl production in the brewing process. And then, of course, at Coors, I was there for 32 years. I reformulated the Coors beer into Coors Banquet back in 2001. I created low-carb beers for them, did a pre-prohibition lager, and then, of course, created Blue Moon Brewing Company. And one thing is that I did write the book Brewing with Cannabis last year. And it's been 25 years, 26 years since the last time a book on brewing with cannabis was published. And I do have a copy of that original book. It's really written in a 1990s fashion. It's pretty crude, not very sophisticated at all. In fact, it has a few recipes which are extract recipes, because that's really what they did back then. Let's see, the pages of the book, again, and it's a small book, very small book, I think maybe 80 or 90 pages. Half of that book is like stories and recipes, extract recipes. The other half is dedicated to labels, labels, something called like high brew, and you just chop up the labels and stick them on your bottles. So it's an interesting book. And if you, it's out of print, but if you can find it, it's interesting to read, basically from a historical perspective. But I did contact the author, Ed Rosenthal. I think he's in his 80s now. He's considered the godfather of cannabis, and he lives in California. And I asked him if I could re-publish some of his early recipes in my book to kind of compare and contrast what the first book showed as far as brewing with cannabis. And he said, yeah, so I recreated and republished some of his recipes. I think I did about four of his recipes, maybe six, in the book, so along with some new recipes, so you can kind of see what was being done in the 1990s. But my hope is that the book will help homebrewers, craft brewers, and lay people on their journeys to exploring everything about cannabis. I tried to, and since it's been so long since a book was written about marijuana, I thought I'd throw a bunch in there, everything from the history of why the plant was made illegal, which I'll just kind of cut to the chase here. It was basically because there was a lot of racist attitudes back at the turn of the century, and cannabis posed a huge threat to the profits of some big industrial companies. So it was made illegal without any scientific research. Meanwhile, people just claimed it led to everything from getting you hooked on that and harder drugs and just all these terrible things, which are totally not true about the plant. In fact, nowadays we're finding out that the plant contains valuable medical properties. One such property is that CBD in a purified form can be given to children with severe epilepsy, and it helps. The first drug that was used was called Epidiolex, and it received approval from the FDA. And by the way, since it was CBD was first used as a drug, that's the reason why it's not legal to put it into beverages and foods right now, because it was first used as a drug, and the federal government is very strict with that. So if you see CBD products for sale, in general, they're always illegal federally. There are some states that have legalized it, but on a federal basis, CBD products for humans and for pets are illegal right now. So, speaking of legalities, there are a bunch of things to know before you start down the journey of working with marijuana or even hemp. So, for some up-to-the-minute status on laws, I've thrown up a couple of sites you can go on that are updated weekly, if not monthly, and they have a lot of the recent laws that are passed in regards to legality. So be aware of what you're doing, because a lot of people think that even in states where cannabis is legal or medical or marijuana is legal, that it's that you can do anything. But in fact, you can't. For example, in Colorado, each resident can grow up to six marijuana plants for their own personal consumption. But what a lot of people don't realize, even in Colorado, is that you cannot grow those outdoors. That's illegal. And if you grow them, when you grow them indoors, if you do, you have to keep them away from children. And the state they have the right to go and inspect and arrest people. They don't do it on an active basis, but they could. And a lot of people grow outdoors not realizing that's illegal. So know the law so that you don't end up in jail. Also, Oregon is a state where it's very a lot of things are allowed. It's a real progressive state, or so they say. But in Oregon, if you grow within, I think it's like 1,000 feet of a school, you can face a felony, and I think it's up to like 20 or 30 years in prison. So they take, although it's on the surface it sounds like they're real progressive, they take things really seriously, so you have to know the laws. And then Delta 8 and Delta 10 products are pretty recent in the market. These things are THC products sold in states where marijuana is illegal. So places like Texas, Louisiana, a lot of places, probably even here, you might find some Delta 8 products in truck stops, convenience stores. Delta 8 is a product where they take hemp, which is federally legal, and you isolate the CBD from hemp, treat it with acid, and it will it will convert with acid treatment into THC, which Delta 8 THC. Delta 9 is the stuff that's naturally in marijuana that makes us high. Delta 8 is a similar compound. You will get high, but it has about, I would say, 30 to 40% of the power of THC. So you'll get high, but not as high as you do on Delta 9. But it is something that people believe is federally legal, since it can be made from the hemp plant. But again, know your laws before you do anything with this stuff, so you don't end up in jail. So a lot of people don't realize, some do, that cannabis and hop are considered cousins or close relatives because they both belong to the Cannabaceae family of flowering plants. And in that family, there are several different species, but the two that are most important industrially are cannabis and hops, Humulus lupulus. A lot of us are familiar with hops, and you see that the cones up there are something all of us are familiar with. They typically are compressed into pellets or extracted into a liquid that looks like thick green pancake syrup. And you use that in brewing, and a lot of brewers have been using this stuff for years. So there's a lot of science on hops. Cannabis, on the other hand, that's a bud that hasn't been trimmed there to the left of the hop cones. But cannabis, not a lot, of research has been done. The Israelis have done a ton of research, but still it's not anything really in-depth to the point where hops have been studied. So we're still learning a lot about cannabis. But that's what they look like. Hops, of course, are a climbing plant. They climb on vines. Cannabis is an upright herb. It can grow up to maybe... At home, you could get it to grow up to about 5 feet or so, but in an industrial situation or wild situations, too, they can grow as high as maybe 8 feet. So they're big, bushy plants. And of course, the whole goal of growing cannabis, and I go over in the book how to grow it, but the whole goal is to maximize the number of buds on the plant so that you can collect those buds and use them. So... on the hop plant, of course, the cones look like that. On the cannabis buds, the active ingredients are in little structures called trichomes. They're those glassy-looking structures on the tips right there. And inside those glassy structures are all of the cannabinoids and the terpenes, so all those magical ingredients in the plant. And, of course, all of us know that in the hop cone, the real nice oils and... alpha acids, everything, are located in the lupulin glands, located inside, underneath the leaves. If you took the little leaves on the hop cones and peeled them back, you would see this yellow powder, and that's where all the magical hop compounds are. So, again, these are closely related to the point where the compounds are there in these little structures, and all you have to do is isolate those things, and you've got... beer or marijuana. On this one, I tried to show again the close relation between hops and cannabis. On the upper part of the slide, you see alpha acids. They're humulone, and that's what exists in the hop cone. But when you brew with it in heat during boiling, what happens is those alpha acids become isomerized. So humulone becomes isohumulone. And then, and that's what tastes bitter in beer. Makes beer taste like beer, but it's through the boiling process that happens. And in a very similar way, you take cannabis, you have to heat it to make things active. On there I've got THC, which is the stuff that gets us high. But in the plant, all these cannabinoids, CBD, CBG, THC, etc., there's over 100 of them in the plant. They exist in the acid form, which is designated by the A after the name there. So there we've got THCA, CBDA, CBGA, the acid form. And I've circled it in green on the slides. It's a carboxylic acid extension that's on the molecule. And through heating, just like alpha acids, that little acid will break off. And what happens is you have a fully active form of cannabinoid. So THC through heat becomes activated. THCA becomes activated to THC. Same with CBD, same with all the cannabinoids. That's why when you smoke pot, that heat is what activates it and makes you high. Or if you make brownies or cook with it, the heat is what you have to do to convert it and make it into an active form. Again, just like alpha acids. So again, I toss that up there just to show you how kind of closely related these plants are. And as I said, there are over 100 cannabinoids in the plant. I've tossed just a couple up here, THC, CBD, CBN, CBG, THCV, and the perceived effect of these cannabinoids. So, of course, all of us are familiar with THC. That can make you high. It's also an anti-inflammatory agent. So there's a lot of things that THC does, but I think the most popular thing all of us know is that it makes you high. CBD, a lot of us have heard of CBD in the news. It's something that can help people sleep, help you relax. Sometimes it doesn't work. People will take it and say, I didn't feel anything. And that's because CBD is one of those things that has to be given with other cannabinoids and able to make it truly work, because it doesn't really go to the we have receptors in our body, in our brain and throughout our body. They're called the cannabinoid receptors. And these cannabinoids just go in and bind to these receptors. CBD is one of the cannabinoids that doesn't bind to the receptor. It acts on a secondary pathway. And so that's why CBD doesn't always work if you take it. But if you combine it with THC or CBN, CBG, it will work for sure. And then you can have a real effective sleep aid. So if you can't sleep at night and you're trying CBD and it doesn't work, combine it with some other cannabinoids and you'll sleep like a baby, believe me. And there are a lot of other cannabinoids in the plant that we're finding out about. Some act like caffeine. Some act like they give you courage, like you could go off and battle and fight, or go to a new job interview and just feel so confident. Others give you creativity to the point where you take it and all of a sudden you feel like you could solve any problem in the world. Some act like Viagra. And the bottom one, THCV, they call that the skinny cannabinoid because it decreases your appetite and it makes you feel like you've had a full meal. And that so that's things like that are really promising for the future, for medical applications or even experiential applications where you just want something to happen. And at the bottom there, I put a note. Cannabinoids, these things that are found in the cannabis plant, they have a bitter taste but no aroma. So they're like, again, like alpha acids. They have bitterness. But there is currently no way to measure that bitterness as there is in beer. So in beer, you can take a spectrophotometer and measure the IBUs that are in beer. And IBUs can be translated into bitterness. You could say, this IPA has 50 IBUs. And most of us know, 50, that's going to be pretty bitter. Or you can measure something like Coors Light that has 8 IBUs and say, we know that's way, way down on the scale. So that's not going to be very bitter. With cannabinoids, we don't really have a way to measure. We've tried to measure using the IBU method, but it just doesn't work with cannabinoids. So at this point, we have to use sensory, and with about 10 milligrams of cannabinoids, like THC, we estimate it's about somewhere 2 to 4 IBUs in perception. So when you formulate your beers, just keep that in mind so that if you're making a lighter beer, you've got to compensate with your hop bill. And then terpenes. Hops have terpenes. Cannabis have terpenes. And for those of you that don't know, terpenes are those chemical compounds that give plants and vegetables, all those, their aromas. So strawberries, peaches, you name it, those nice aromas, like rose, those are due to the terpenes in the plant. And the official name is terpenoids, but all of us refer to them as terpenes. And in the cannabis industry, all the cannabis people call them, they just shorten it to terps. And that, they're referring to all these compounds. And on the left column, I've put just some select terpenes. And then I've said if they're mainly hop prevalent or cannabis prevalent or prevalent in both plants. And then the very last column, I have the perceived physiological effects. And you can see humulene, which is present in hops. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's an appetite suppressant. And then limonene, that's one that's mainly cannabis prevalent, anti-inflammatory, anti-sedative. And these perceived physiological effects actually are from the scientific literature, so they're not something that people just kind of took and said, oh, it feels like an anti-inflammatory. These things have some actual science behind them. It's almost like aromatherapy. When it first came out, it was a pseudoscience. People said, I don't know if that really works. But after a while, some researchers did actual work and said, you know what? In animal models, these things work. And then they took it further and studied humans and said, you know what? This actually works in humans. So, yeah, some of these things have thorough science behind them and truly work on an aroma-based study. And still some of them are being studied on animals and work in animals, and they're trying to figure out, does this work in humans? So this with terpenes, it really is a whole interesting area. And I think some of us have probably felt, when we have a lot of IPA and we're smelling that nice aroma coming off the IPA, those are terpenes, and they have physiological effects. So for me, yes, they have alcohol, but I think if you just smell those aromas, you eventually will start to have some effects like anti-inflammatory. Your inflammation will go down. If you have arthritis or whatever, you'll start to feel a little bit better just smelling those things. And in fact, in Belgium, I lived there for 4 years, and they grow hops in the southern part of Belgium. And down there, they sell things called hop pillows. They're these little gunny sack pillows about that big, as big as a dollar bill maybe, but they've sold them and used them for years. And what the Belgians do is you buy them, you put them under your sleeping pillow, so at night those aromas come up, and they say it helps with sleep, it helps with inflammation, all these other things. I believe it works because I've read through, the science says it works, and I think, and the fact that the Belgians have used these things for so many years, I'm convinced that aromatherapy with certain compounds really does work. And, of course, in the cannabis world, you have what's called the entourage effect, which literally means the whole is bigger than any piece of it. So what that means in cannabis is that if you pull out CBD and try it, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But as I said earlier, if you combine it with THC or other cannabinoids, it will work. And here I've put together some cannabinoids, terpenes, to show you what the entourage effect would look like. So easiest one, I guess, is down at the bottom. I said earlier THCV is the skinny cannabinoid. And if you combine that with humulene, which is a terpene that kind of makes you feel satiated, combined, those things really work to make you feel like, you're not hungry. On the other hand, there are some compounds that give you the munchies, and so people are studying those to help people with cancer or even older people who no longer have an appetite. You give them these things, and all of a sudden they're on the phone to Papa John's asking for a full sausage pizza. So these things do work, and in the future we're going to see more and more of these things being isolated by mainly, I think, by big pharma companies, because for them, they see the money in this. But who knows? Maybe someone in the audience here is home brewers. You may find a combination of terpenes and cannabinoids that does something, and you may sell your little creation to a big pharma company for, you know, for a small fortune. You may be selling for, you know, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million. Because these companies, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in this area. It's so new. It's in its infancy. But that's why I hope somebody here really does start to do some research and really dig down and who knows, even patent some of this stuff. Because if you don't do it, somebody else will. So now one thing people ask is, well, how do you get cannabinoids into beer? Because cannabinoids are just like hop compounds. They're oily, and it's like they're hard to get into beer. You put them in, and they float to the top. So I've spelled out some of the things here. You know, they're nonpolar, very hydrophobic. There's lots of things like chlorophyll, waxes, lipids that really can contaminate and make things even harder to put into solution. But you do need an ultrasonic mixer if you're going to do it on a big professional scale. And as I said earlier, they have a bitter taste but no aroma. All the aroma comes from the terpenes. So I'm going to outline some steps here on how to make cannabinoids water-soluble. And in fact, the same method is used to make hop oils water-soluble. There's companies that are playing around with solubilized hop extracts, so you just put them into your beer and you've got instant bitterness, instant aroma, and it's fairly easy to do. So first one is at least for cannabinoids, you have to activate them. So this is just a heating step. As I talked about earlier, you heat typically 230 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes, and that activates THC, CBD, whatever cannabinoid, because you need it to be in the active form, so it has a physiological effect on your body. Second step is you extract it from the buds. So you use different compounds, butane, which is highly flammable. You could use CO2, just the way hop compounds are generally extracted, using CO2 or supercritical CO2, and you can use ethanol. And I've highlighted the fact that if you extract, at that point, you can add that directly to beer. It's going to be cloudy and filled with some sediment, but it is soluble with ethanol, and just put it into beer. You can also use water for extraction, but these are the more efficient ways of extracting the cannabinoids and the terpenes. And then third step out of four that you do is it's called encapsulation. You use any type of these oils. I've listed a bunch here because it's just any vegetable oil. And, of course, some are allergenic, so you've got to be aware of that. So the top one, coconut oil, is the one that most people use, MCT oil, medium chain triglyceride oil, palm, hemp, olives, sunflower, any vegetable oil will work. And the whole purpose is just to encapsulate and make it homogeneous. But you mix them together like that, hold it at a couple hundred degrees Fahrenheit until it's homogeneous. And, you know, it's pretty quick, 10, 15 minutes, so it doesn't take too long to do that. And then the very last step is you find an emulsifier. Most people will use Tween 80. Some will use lecithin. But you use, and I put the procedures there, a couple volumes of water plus emulsifier to one volume of encapsulated cannabinoids that you did in step three. And then you mix it together and put it in an ultrasonic mixer for about 10 minutes, and you just make sure it doesn't heat up too much. You have to keep it cool. And you've got fully water-soluble product. It's not truly water-soluble because it doesn't break down, so it's called water-compatible. And with this step, I've put this up there because a lot of people want it to go into solution and be almost invisible to the naked eye instead of cloudy. And so this is the step that makes it almost invisible to the naked eye because you're creating nanomolecules with this. Using an ultrasonic mixer for extended periods of time just breaks these things down into smaller and smaller little particles. The smaller you get, the more invisible it gets to the naked eye. Of course,
also the smaller you get, the faster it goes into your body. So you put, you drink this in a beer in nanomolecule format, and you'll feel it within typically 15 minutes. The bigger the pieces are, it can take an hour or 2 hours for you to feel it. So that's why things like baking with cannabis and making a brownie, it's not it's more micro-encapsulated there. It's not nano-encapsulated. And so that's why you eat a brownie, and it takes a while for you to feel it. You know, you and it can lead to trouble because you eat one brownie, it's like, I don't feel it. So 30 minutes later, you say, I'm going to eat another. So you eat another. And you, I don't feel it. And so 15 minutes later, you eat another one. And then finally, hour and a half, 2 hours later, it hits you like a brick wall, and you're down on the ground, and it's like, I feel it. So, yeah. So that's why it's important to get your dosage really, really good and consistent so that you know exactly how much is there and how long it takes to get into the body. To make a homebrew cannabis tincture, alcohol-based, here's some general steps. Pretty easy. You take an ounce of finely ground buds. And in Colorado, an ounce is going to cost you anywhere from, $100 to $300, depending on the quality. A few ounces of grain-neutral spirits, typically Everclear. Mix it. Shake it, store it at room temperature for a couple days, shaking daily, and then you just filter it through cotton, squeeze the cotton to get as much liquid out, store it in a cool place, and you've got a tincture that can be added to beer. And of course, that will have everything in it. It's a complete extract, so you'll have the terpenes, the cannabinoids. If you want to go further and just get the cannabinoids, then you'll have to go through distillation, which is a different process. Beyond this, to isolate just those cannabinoids, and that's what we do is we distill off the THC and the CBD so we can use just those compounds in our beers, because we want beers with the taste of craft beer and the effects of cannabis. We don't want that smell, that dank smell of weed, because that's what we found is there's people who love it and people who hate it. There's not a lot of people in the middle that say, ah, that's okay. You either hate it or you love it, the smell of weed. And most people, my guess is 75 to 80% of people here in the United States hate it. They say, oh, it smells like a dead skunk. Whereas there's about 25% who can't get enough of it. They smell it, they go, oh, gosh, I love that smell. But those people are definitely in the minority. Most people don't like the smell. So that's how to make a tincture and use it in your home brews. And as I said earlier, non-alcoholic beers in the professional world are required. And here's some of the ways to make beers without alcohol. I wrote an article for New Brewer a couple years back and went over these ways so that craft brewers have a much better feel for what's involved in making non-alcoholic beers. But basically, arrested fermentation, novel yeasts that don't ferment, maltose, or dilution. You just add wort or water to dilute it down. Those are the biological ways to make non-alcoholic beer. You can also use mechanical methods, such as reverse osmosis or vacuum distillation. And those two will remove any alcohol from a finished beer. And then, of course, the TTB, the federal government, does have strict guidelines as to what you can call a beer. We talked about that earlier. So beer is anything that has an alcohol content above 0.5. You can call it a beer. Below 0.5, you can't call it a beer. You have to call it a non-alcoholic malt beverage. Although from 2.5 down to 0.5, you can call it a low alcohol beer. So, and these are all labeling things that the TTB has clearly stated. And if brewers don't state the beer the right way on their labels, they get in trouble. So also, non-alcoholic beer has less than 0.5% down to 0.01, and then alcohol-free is a true 0.00% beer with no measurable alcohol. And there's some big brewers who are calling their beer zero alcohol beer, but that's just kind of a marketing term, zero alcohol. So And then for home brewing, one thing I recommend is stovetop removal, because it's easy. After you ferment, take your 5-gallon or 7-gallon batch, put it in the oven or stovetop, and just hold it at 173 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the boiling point of alcohol. And I've done this in my pilot brewery and measured with an Anton Parr unit. Of course, I'm at a mile high, 5,280 feet. And for me, a 5% beer boiling for 1 hour gets down to 0.5% ABV. And I've talked to a lot of brewers, professional brewers, who've done similar experiments, and all of us come to the same conclusion that generally 1 hour at 173 degrees will decrease the alcohol content tenfold. So, and you could do it at home just using your nose. You put it at 173 degrees, and you smell the alcohol coming off. The liquid actually doesn't boil. There's no bubbles forming or anything, but you definitely smell that alcohol coming off. It smells like a sweet solventy smell, and it'll be that way for the first 30 minutes. Then after that, the intensity goes down. But you can kind of see the last 30 minutes, there's still alcohol there, 1.5% alcohol. And that last 30 minutes of 173 degrees will take it all the way down to non-alcoholic beer levels, around 0.5, starting with a 5% beer. So that's in general, that's what you can expect as you make non-alcoholic beer at home. So some final warnings here are... it is federally illegal, as I've said. There are some states that have legalized. I think 18 states in the U.S. have legalized cannabis for recreational purposes, but still, we have a long way to go before it's federally legal. So be very, very careful. Number two is really important because, I mean, you guys are all mature here, men, women, we're all mature. But once in a while, somebody says, oh, let's trick Joe Blow over there and give him our cannabis beer. And it's like, I say do not do that, because you never know what can happen. There's not a lot of research in this area. So never fool or trick someone into taking cannabis, because, like I said, they may be very sensitive to THC and end up on the floor for hours, and you may think they're having a heart attack and call 911. In fact, it's funny, because up at the colleges, especially Boulder, University of Colorado in Boulder, I've talked to a lot of the first responders up there, and what they tell us is at the start of every school year, they get calls, 911 calls, because the parents take little Johnny or little Susie to see you, and of course the parents say, ooh, it's been a long time since I've had pot, and it's legal here in Colorado, and first thing they do is go buy edibles. They take one, and they say, don't feel it, so they take another one, and pretty soon they feel like they're having a heart attack and they're on the ground. And they say, oh, no, and they call 911. And, of course, the first responders come and they say, you're high. just stay there and it'll wear off. And, of course, the parents feel like idiots because it's like, ugh. but it really is it's something you have to be aware of, because some people are very sensitive and they can be in couch lock for hours. Others may take 100 milligrams and nothing happens, because there are some people who are naturally, they have high tolerance for this stuff, just like alcohol. Some of us can drink a lot of alcohol, some of us can't without getting flushed, because alcohol is one of those things, alcohol dehydrogenase, the enzyme that breaks it down. Some of us have a lot of that, and you know, it takes a lot to get those people buzzed. Others, in particular, there are certain races, like Asians, I think it's about 25%, and American Indians lack that enzyme. So they take just, you know, a few sips of alcohol, and all of a sudden they're red, and they start getting buzzed. And it's because we're all different in how we can break down alcohol, and we're all different in our tolerance to THC. So never fool or trick anybody. And again, be very careful mixing alcohol with cannabis, because we don't know everything about it, and understand the dosage of THC. And if you get into this area, start low, 2 to 5 milligrams, and see what it does to your body, and then work up from there. But start low, and then just really have fun with it, but be very careful. And here's some related resources for more information. There was a Zymergy article published a couple years back, and then I reprinted here the websites to go on for legal status, up-to-the-minute legal status, so you could just make sure that you're doing things legally. And with that, I can open it up to some questions, if you have any questions at all about working with cannabis or anything at all. So microphone's there, and actually just over here. So.
Yeah, hi. My question is, when you make the tincture, when's the best part to add it to the brewing process?
So when you make the tincture, when is the best part to add it to the brewing process? Right before bottling. That's the best time to do it to save all those cannabinoids. Because one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to brew with cannabis like hops because it's so hydrophobic, you're going to lose about 70% of your cannabinoids. They're all going to stick to the kettle. They're going to be sticking to the to everything as you transfer from stage to stage. So make the tincture to preserve as much of the cannabinoid material as possible and add it right before bottling.
Would you be willing to go over the steps of distilling THC?
That's a whole other talk, but maybe the next AHA I can do that so that people can know how to distill off and isolate the different cannabinoids, because it's useful because you can purify just CBD or THC or whatever you want. But, yeah, that's it's a whole different science in a whole different talk. It takes time. I can't do it in just a few seconds. I wish I could, but it is pretty in-depth. So, yeah.
In the cannabis industry, they're currently, doing a lot of studies on, THC might not be the thing that actually gets you, super high. A lot of that is the terpenes themselves. Are you currently working on any of that yourself, like myrcene specifically? I know is one that crosses the brain-blood barrier very well.
Mm-hmm.
Are you, personally working on that at Syria?
We are, and as I mentioned in a few slides back, it's called the entourage effect.
Right.
So THC by itself will make you high. It definitely will. We've tested it, and it does. What happens with when you combine it with terpenes such as myrcene? Myrcene is one of the few that actually amplifies up the effect of THC. So, and that's why we say to be very careful combining beer with THC, because myrcene is one of those natural terpenes that jacks up THC. It makes it more effective. Again, the entourage effect. We've done a lot of work on that. And it's interesting because there are cannabinoids that kind of temper or moderate the effect of THC, such as CBD. That's one reason we our IPA, we combine 10 milligrams of THC with 10 of CBD, because if you consume THC by itself, some people get a good buzz, others start to get anxious and nervous. But if you put the CBD in there, it moderates that, so those people get less anxious. That's why I say there's so many unknowns. Do this very carefully. But we've studied this a bunch. And our IPA has lots of myrcene in it.
Yeah.
And combined with the 10 milligrams of THC plus the CBD to moderate the anxiety, you do get a really good buzz off our IPA. With our Grain Wave, Belgian White, it has 5 milligrams of THC. And there, the main terpenes are linalool from coriander and then limonene from orange peel. And limonene and linalool are very strong in anti-stress and just really relaxed feelings. And combined with THC, you get this real nice relaxed feeling from our Belgian White at 5 milligrams. You don't get a strong buzz. Some do, but most people just get a real nice relaxed chill feeling from that, and that's what we're doing. So we're trying to use entourage effect to simulate what happens in the beer world so that people who are knowledgeable about the effects of how much alcohol is in IPA and how it makes them feel can translate to our IPA with cannabis and terpenes and say, I feel a very similar feeling. I'm buzzed and relaxed with this, with our IPA. Or they can try our Belgian White, and if they've had Belgian Whites, such as Blue Moon or Allagash, any Belgian White, they know that one glass tastes good, and they you know, takes the edge off. Nobody's drunk from a glass of Blue Moon. And with our Belgian White, same thing. You don't get buzzed. You get this nice, relaxed feel from it. So, yeah, we've done a ton of work, and we're still doing work because there's a lot of unknown stuff. But, yeah, it's fun because it's you learn something new almost every day.
Right. Thanks.
You bet.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got two questions, actually. The first question is about the making a tincture. Would it be beneficial, or would it be a difference if you or do you need to heat the cannabis prior to the tincture?
You definitely need to heat it to activate it. if you make the and that's my assumption here is if you make tinctures or anything, step one is heat it to, I think it was 230 degrees is that magical temperature, 230 degrees Fahrenheit, so whatever, for 30 minutes, and that will break off that acid and make it fully active. And of course, if you can't reach it or hold it at 230, you know, and you can only hold it at 200 degrees, that'll work too. Just hold it longer. But you got to activate, and that's what will make everything active. All the cannabinoids will become fully active, and then make your tincture, and you're good to go.
Great. The second question is about dosage. So, you know, like an ounce of cannabis in milligrams, that doesn't translate directly to grams. Like, how many milligrams are in an ounce, and is that a variable? Like.
So in my book, I talk about how to do that calculation and how to make a Excel spreadsheet to make it really easy, because you know that you go to a dispensary and you buy an ounce of buds at, say, they're 23% THC. That's a dry weight basis. So if an ounce has 23% THC, you can quickly calculate, okay, 23% of that ounce is THC. And then as you extract it, you know how many milliliters is in your tincture, and there's so many milligrams per milliliter. And then on that, you say, okay, if there's 150 milligrams per milliliter, or per 10 milliliters, whatever it is, it's like, okay, I add just like a half a milliliter to my 12 ounces, and I get X amount of milligrams. And so in the book, I talk about how to make an Excel spreadsheet to calculate, so that it helps you to make your bottles as consistent as possible at the desired milligrams. And again, start with 2 to 5 milligrams. That's that nice low magical number, so you don't overdo it and you know, get sick and give up on it and go move on to magic mushrooms. So
that's the next AHA, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers. Yeah.
Hi. I have two questions too.
Okay.
Totally, like, very different.
Maybe one more, so I want to share.
All right. Okay. Real quick, is it the dealkalization process, stovetop dealkalization? Isn't that like a huge vector for oxidation? I mean, like, isn't that going to trash your beer? I mean,
I generally recommend yes and no. I recommend, because as you heat the liquid. Oxygen is driven out, but in beer, there's low oxygen because the yeast has taken it all up, and the yeast is there. So it's very low to begin with. And as you heat it, it's even lower. So just maintain a real clean atmosphere. And I generally recommend darker beers, darker beers, browns, porters, stouts. Those usually do best with stovetop removal. But you can get good results on light beers, too.
All right, I'll let this guy do his question.
Oh, okay.
Mine was related to that because of, you know, hoppy beers and stuff. If the stovetop, would you lose the aromatics and things like that?
You will lose, whether it's hop aromatics or yeast aromatics, you will lose them during heating. So that's why you have to be careful which style of beer to make into a cannabis beer. With really hoppy ones, the thing I recommend is in general, make it non-alcoholic. and then add back the terpenes in liquid form if you can find them, because there are sources of liquid hops out there, and just add it back that way, and you should be good. Make sure that it's alcohol based so you don't infect the beer, and then you should be good. So after you've de-alcoholized an IPA, a lot of the nice aromatics are gone. So what you do is buy water-soluble hop terpenes and add them back in.
In your book?
I think it's in the book. Gosh, it's been a while since I read that book. but yeah, that's the way to do it, and it works. Believe me, it definitely works. Well, thank you very much, and have a great conference.
Well, you bring a whole new meeting to relax and have a homebrew. I just want to remind everybody, please do the surveys. Big help. So thank you. Appreciate everybody being here. We got another session coming right up on CBD.